skibbi doo ba 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 dee. Skibbi dee ba ba la ba ba dee boo boo doo ba ba doo boo ree.
Nice scatting, man.
Thank you. I think I said dupe instead of boop at one point.
Not bad, fellas. You're better than you look.
Hey, screw you.
Gotham Sports Network presents NYG Weekly.
NYG Weekly, Ethan Weiss here with you once again. Before we get into the post-draft edition of NYG Weekly, you know what we got to do? We got to take care of the housekeeping. So first things first, you can follow us on Twitter. You can follow me at EthanGSN. Follow Weiss at NYG Daily and follow the blog at GothamSN. Subscribe. We're everywhere. iTunes, Audioboom, Google Play, Stitcher Radio, Spotify. Subscribe, unsubscribe, resubscribe. Rate us 5 stars. Leave us a kind review. That's the housekeeping. Let's just get right into it. Weiss, we did very little prep for this episode of NYG Weekly. I think the general consensus is a big wow. Joe Judge and Dave Gettleman absolutely fucking crushed this draft. An A-plus from me. You know it is a successful draft when you have... You know, I was actually going to tweet this out earlier, and I was driving, so I didn't. But the Arnold Schwarzenegger meme from Alien, where they're doing the high five, where one side is analytics guys and the other side is film guys, visual meme, high-fiving, in the middle is the Giants draft. It seems that Giants fans, pretty much across the board, like I would say around 85% of Giants fans I've seen on social media, are thrilled with the result of the draft. The analytics guys, Pro Football Focus, who are probably the lead the league in shitting on Dave Gettleman outside of you and me, were absolutely ecstatic with the Giants draft, and film guys were ecstatic with the Giants draft. It is so rare that sort of across the board you have that general consensus of, wow, the Giants did a really, really, really good job. All rise. Kudos to Joe Judge in his first season. It's very obvious that his fingerprints were all over this draft, and we'll get into it when we discuss each pick. But listen, I mean, I'm a Dave Gettleman hater. Since he took over, since he botched 2018, he botched the rebuild, thought he could rebuild as he also competed. I've been as critical as anybody about hating Dave Gettleman. I mean, listen, you can't just give all the props to Joe Judge with this draft. Dave Gettleman and his scouting ability obviously deserves some credit here as well. The Giants finally have direction, and I think that is sort of the overarching theme here, is that, you know, they thought they could compete in 2018, they thought they could rebuild while they competed, things that just are very rarely true in 2020 NFL times, and to see a new young head coach come in here and sort of exert his influence and say, no, you know, this team needs to be rebuilt from the bottom up, starting with the offensive line, and we're going to fix the secondary and acknowledge that it's not going to be a one-year fix, to just come in here, exert that influence, and for the first time in probably close to 3 or 4 years, the New York Giants have direction. They don't have a GM who's going out there and spending top picks on high upside tackles and skill position players like Jerry Reese and Dave Gettleman have done the last 5-7 years. They invested in the trenches, they invested in versatility, and you just have to sort of put your faith in the coaching staff moving forward, that some of the guys who are a bit on the raw side, like Matt Pert, and some of the guys they took in the later rounds can be developed. I'm ecstatic, as you guys can tell. I'll throw it to you to give your thoughts, but to me, the Giants draft class gets an A+, two thumbs up to Joe Judge and Dave Gettleman. I don't see how anybody out there can be, you know, disappointed. Maybe if there was a player you were eyeing in the mid rounds and the Giants went with Shane Lemieux or Cam Brown instead of a wide receiver or something like that, maybe you can be a little upset, but overall the team has direction, and that's really the big thing for me.
Yeah, I think you pretty much nailed it. I mean, for me, with the need of offensive line, it's something that I've been sort of begging for months now. I mean, if you look back at the previous episodes, I've said, you know, at some point you have to address the offensive line. And I felt like Dave Gettleman hasn't really done that the first two drafts. Only taking two offensive linemen. You can't just throw money at the problem and pay big money for mediocre talent like they've done with Nate Solder. You really have to invest in, you have to develop offensive linemen. And I think finally we saw that investment in this draft, not just with the Andrew Thomas, but with the Shane Lemieux, with the Matt Pertz, really just getting guys that I'm getting a guy that can start from day one in Andrew Thomas, and then obviously guys that you can develop where you're not necessarily waiting until the last minute where a guy like Kevin Zeitler is on his last legs and you have to replace him immediately. You're slowly starting that process of building depth and sort of getting ready for the future. And in terms of the direction, I mean, I couldn't agree more. I think the Giants finally have a plan that they want to execute, and now it's about executing it. And I think the first 2 years, a lot of it was like, what's the direction that we're going in? You invest in a rookie quarterback, you invest in a running back early, but you don't really do enough to address the offensive line. It just doesn't work like that. You need to build your offensive line. This game is won at the line of scrimmage. So I finally see a sense of direction with this team, and it sort of gives me hope. And I think, you know, I'm not in the whole pre-draft, you know, grades. I want to see these guys play. But the Giants, I think, really, really, really did a good job of laying out a plan and then executing that plan in this draft. And now it's up to, like you said, the coaching staff to develop some of these players. But I think the Giants took a big step forward in addressing a key area in this draft and also adding versatility. And I think with Joe Judge's influence, you look at the type of things he's looking for. It's versatility. You look at some of the guys that took in the later rounds, specifically those linebackers, they're versatile. They can do many things. They can rush the passer. They can drop back into coverage. Those are the type of things you're looking for. This is a young team, so you're looking for guys that have leadership qualities. A lot of the guys that they took, you know, when you research them, you look into them, you see what their coaching staff in college has said, talked about leadership, talked about high football IQ, right? This isn't a team that's going to rely on veterans to sort of, you know, teach the young players. You know, the famous quote from Joe Judge was, I don't want my 14-year-old, you know, raising my 6-year-old. And I think it applies to this team. And I'm really just impressed by some of the players that they took, but I'm also impressed at them laying out this plan and then executing that plan in this draft. Now it's about seeing if they pushed all the right buttons. But I'm impressed with the Giants. I think that, it's, like I said, the first time in the Dave Gettleman era, I'm very encouraged with the state of this team and where this team is going.
Yeah, so, I mean, I think one of the quotes, not to cut you off there, but I don't want 53 independent contractors. I want one team. That was Joe Judge's big message on his new vision for the franchise. So, like you said, a lot of that in the draft. For me, another big thing, it's not only the direction, but it's the acknowledgement that this is a process, right? This isn't quick fix. Let's fill these holes. No, this team is not going to compete in 2020. The hope is that at the earliest 2021, they are maybe gunning for the NFC East and maybe a bit further. But for, and me personally, and you can feel free to disagree, this is a team that by 2022, if built correctly and if money is appropriated correctly and the players that they have drafted this year develop, this is a team that should be competing in 2022 for a deep, deep playoff run. On the back end of Dan Jones' rookie contract, you load up with any holes in free agency that you have left from the draft, but you build that foundation in the draft. You have Andrew Thomas, franchise left tackle. If Matt Pertz develops in 2021, we're talking about two tackles on their rookie contracts that have panned out and are protecting Dan Jones and Saquon Barkley. Then you have Kevin Zeitler, who's sort of getting up there in age, but at least you have the hope that Brandon Lemieux can develop, and we'll get into it. But Brandon Lemieux is underratedly one of my favorite picks of the entire draft, especially the fact that he's been working at center this past offseason. And then you still have Will Hernandez, who's going into year three. So a young core of an offensive line who you cross your fingers, will all be on their rookie deals at the same time. This team is competitive, along with Dan Jones on his rookie contract while they're competitive. And then you use that cap space. You don't go out there and sign, you know, over-the-hill tackles for a shitload of money. You go out there and you fill those positions with that free agency money that you have now, because you have all of these core building block pieces still on their rookie deals. And I think it's something that a lot of people forget about. You know, and we talk about it a good amount with Saquon Barkley and what his second contract is going to look like. But if you look at some of the more successful teams over the last 5 or 10 years, a lot of them have built correctly, where in year two or three of their rookie quarterback contract, they're competing for a playoff spot because they've appropriately placed their cap at positions that they should be in. They're really building the core of that team through the draft, right? We've seen it in the past with the Seahawks. We saw it with the Eagles, even though it was Nick Foles in the playoffs. You have to get there somehow. But it's really the window is that rookie quarterback contract. And I think that with Dan Jones going to his second year, that finally taking that draft capital and putting it where it should be, it sets the Giants up for a very, very good position. Not this coming season, because, again, you have a rookie head coach, a really tough schedule, a lot of development that's needed from some of these young guys, and your roster still has a shitload of holes. But maybe 2021, where you have, you know, Nate Solder's contract off the books, and maybe if one of these UDFA receivers, Austin Mack, pans out, Golden Tate's off the books, Slayton's still on his rookie deal as a fifth-round pick, right? You hit on enough of these late-round picks and these rookie contract guys, you set yourself up to be in a good spot. And I think that's key for this draft and moving forward with Joe Judge.
Yeah, I mean, I think, look, when you look at laying out a plan, like we talk about, we finally feel like the Giants have a plan. When you look at the Giants right now, right, and you look at what they've invested in, right, already in the past, and you look at going forward, what is sort of the quickest way, the quickest and smartest way for them to contend or be competitive? Well, it's through the quarterback. It's through the development of Daniel Jones. Because let's face it, if Daniel Jones isn't able to develop, it doesn't matter what's surrounding him. The Giants won't be able to compete. The quarterback position is the most important position in the NFL. There's nothing more important than the quarterback position. So how do you develop the quarterback? Well, it starts by putting talent around them, specifically the offensive line. It's going to be really – it would have been really hard for Daniel Jones to develop as a quarterback if he's running for his life, if he's constantly under pressure. Then you look at your other investment pitcher, which is Saquon Barkley. We can debate the pick and whatnot. That's a whole different story. But you made the investment. Well, how do you maximize his value, right? How do you get the most return out of him? Well, you got to be able to build an offensive line that he can block from. He can help you move the football and score offensively. And I think that sort of the first 2 years, that's sort of been neglected. Well, here you're starting to do that. You're starting to lay that foundation of what you're going to be, what your identity is going to be, who are the guys you're going to play through. So if – like I said, if you didn't address the offensive line, it's really hard for a rookie quarterback to develop in this league if he doesn't have blocking in front of him. It's the most important part of a team, the offensive line. And I think that, you know, like I said, you can put all these receivers around him, you can draft a running back, a generational running back at two, but if you're not able to protect up front, it's really hard to win this league. And we saw it the last 2 years with this team. They had Sterling Shepard. They had Odell Beckham. They drafted Saquon Barkley. They had Evan Ingram. They had all these skill position players. But what was the number one thing that was hurting this offense? The offensive line. Now you invest in the offensive line. You have a young quarterback. You have Saquon, a dynamic player like Saquon Barkley. You're able to add some skill position players in the later rounds of the draft. Now you can take that next step forward. And I think that, you know, it's very important that, you know, not just this draft class, the one that they just completed, you know, this past weekend, but the previous drafts, those guys also have to develop if the Giants are going to contend. The hope is that they will. The hope is, you know, Will Hernandez plays a lot better. The hope is that some of the young guys on defense, DeAndre Baker, B.J. Hill, Lorenzo Carter, you know, all those young guys that they've drafted on the defensive side of the ball the last 2 years, those guys are able to get better in next year and years forward. That's how you're going to continue. That's how you're going to get to that ultimate goal of being competitive and being a contending team. So while, like I said, it's a good plan that they've laid out, now executing that plan is the next step. And it's going to start with sort of young guys developing and you making the smart decisions in terms of where you invest in free agency, how you develop some of these young players.
Yeah, I mean, you sort of took the words out of my mouth when you started on that little tangent there, right? It's you made the pick with Saquon Barkley, and as much as we disagreed with it and they should have taken a quarterback or traded back, they did it. And he is one of your best players. You got to protect him. Dan Jones, you got to protect him. How do you do that? With the offensive line. On the other side, you take a look at how many holes and potential holes there are on this defense, right? Xavier McKinney is a super, super talented safety, but to expect him to come in on day one and be some sort of stud that's going to shut down people at three or four different positions because he's that versatile, to me, it's not realistic. These guys still need that time to develop. And when you have as many holes on your defense as you do, and it's clearly going to be more than a one-year fix, when in doubt, invest in the offense. In the year of our Lord 2020, in the NFL, all rules, all players, everything, the coaching styles, it favors the offense. When in doubt, build around the offense. Well, you're going to be able to score more than your opponent if you can control the line of scrimmage. When you're up in games and you know you can't trust your defense, well, you invested your 2018 second overall pick in a running back who's supposed to be a Gold Jacket Hall of Famer. Grind out the games. How are you going to grind out the games? Behind a good offensive line. Well, the year after that, you spent your picks on a quarterback who apparently has fumble problems. Okay, how are you going to do that? Build the offensive line. Help him in pass protection, but also enable him to hand it off to Saquon Barkley when he's not dropping back to pass. Eliminate those turnovers. Keep the ball on offense. Grind the games down late in the games. To me, that's an incredibly important piece of this equation that I don't think a lot of people are discussing, is that, listen, yes, the top three picks, two were offense, one were defense. You know, you take your shot on a Cam Brown later on. You know, the defense is a multi-year problem. And personally, I wasn't really enamored with a lot of the pass rushers in this draft outside of the first round. Zach Bond to an extent, Yetur Gross-Matos to a certain extent. None of them really jumped out at me as guys who could develop into that alpha pass rusher. So personally, again, if you're not 100% sold on those pass rushers, fine. Invest in the offense. Again, I'm just going to pound the desk until I'm blue in the face. When in doubt, invest in the offense. Do it. They weren't sold on any of those pass rushers. Totally fine. They weren't sold on Isaiah Simmons. Fine. Invest in the offense. Invest in the trenches. And it's all good. You can use that cap space next year or 2 years down the road once you've freed up some of these albatross contracts. You can do that. And you can go out there and maybe get that alpha pass rusher in free agency or trade for one. And then, you know, you still have two more drafts down the road to draft someone who can play on that other side as well. So I'm not entirely concerned. I'm ecstatic.
Yeah, I'm very happy. And I was especially happy with their first round pick as we get into sort of this pick by pick.
Yeah, let's go pick by pick.
Andrew Thomas, you know, so sort of when this whole draft process started in February, March, I looked a lot. The whole talk was it's a strong offensive tackle class. You know, you look at the top of the list. It's Andrew Thomas, Tristan Wirfs, Mekhi Becton, Jedrick Wills. You know, these are four guys that are expected to go somewhere in the top 10, top 15. And that's been the consensus throughout this whole draft process. And so I really looked into it and sort of what the two guys that stood out to me the most were Tristan Wirfs from Iowa and Andrew Thomas from Georgia. I liked all four guys, but those two of the big four really stood out to me. And I'll be honest with you, over the course of the last, you know, 2-3 weeks, month, I've gone back and forth about which one I prefer. One day I woke up, I said, I want Andrew Thomas. Next day I would say, I want Tristan Wirfs. I just couldn't decide on which one. But as we got closer to the draft, you know, the thing about, to me, with Andrew Thomas is so many times, you know, we look with offensive linemen, we look for upside, what they can be. You know, and sometimes people mix up those words, can and will. Potential is not guaranteed. And with Andrew Thomas, what we saw for his whole collegiate career was he was just consistently good, widely regarded as the best offensive tackle in the draft. He actually was a consistent, I believe he He won the Joe Moore Award, which is the best offensive lineman in college, and he's been consistently in that, either runner-up or winner of that award throughout his collegiate career. Played left tackle throughout the career. In his first year as a redshirt freshman, he started on the right side, but throughout his career, he was a left tackle. Just a guy that I think has been consistently good, has had the best film. Maybe his ceiling is not as high as the other guys, but give me a guy that's going to be a really good left tackle for 10 years over somebody that has a ceiling of, you know, Hall of Fame or whatever. Give me a guy that's a really good offensive tackle and not just good at one in one area. You know, this is a guy that is good at pass blocking, good at run back. We're just consistently good across the board. And I was ecstatic. It was the first time in a long time, not just in the Dave Gettleman era, but in a long time when the Giants sort of drafted a player in the first round that I really was just high on. And I mentioned this before. When we talk about Isaiah Simmons, to me, in terms of positional value, in terms of what he brings to a team, give me a franchise offensive tackle over an inside off-ball linebacker any day of the week. And that's no disrespect to Isaiah Simmons. I think he can be a really good player. He's a multi-dimensional player. But the importance of the offensive tackle, specifically left tackle and right tackle, there's a few things more important than that. And I'm thrilled. I think this is a day one plug-in left tackle. He'll have his struggles. Every rookie offensive tackle has his struggles. But I guarantee by the middle of the season, towards the end of the season, you're going to see a consistently good left tackle that the Giants can rely on for years to come. I'm thrilled with this pick. I love Andrew Thomas. You can go and you can watch his games. He's played against really good pass rushers in his career. He's played against Josh Allen. He played against Kayvon Chasen at LSU. He's played against those Alabama pass rushers. He's a very good player. And I'm absolutely thrilled with this pick. I think the Giants nailed it. He is, in my opinion, the best offensive tackle in this class. And I think that a lot of people say, well, you could have traded back. I don't think so. I mean, again, leading up to this, it was all about, you know, four offensive tackles. They're going to go in the top 10. We're going to see huge on tackles. Oh, there's going to be teams that even trade up for tackles. But once Andrew Thomas went off the board, you saw, obviously, you take out the two teams that took a quarterback. But, you know, you didn't see a run on offensive lineman until about the Cleveland Browns at 10. So that tells me that there was a lot of teams that had Andrew Thomas as their highest rated tackle. And I was all for trading down. And I definitely would have loved if the Giants were able to trade down and get more picks while also getting Andrew Thomas. But, you know, they tried. All I can ask them is that they tried. They tried to do whatever they could. It was clear. It was evident. I hope that they carry this philosophy on, not just about the first round, but about other rounds and trading down and getting more picks. But, man, this is a home run pick for me. I love Andrew Thomas. I think the Giants found their franchise left tackle for years to come. And, you know, I couldn't be more happy. It's a huge burden off of me because for so long I've been so jealous of teams like in our division, the Redskins having Trent Williams for years,
yep.
The Cowboys having Tyron Smith, the Eagles having Jason Peters, and Lane Johnson. But I am ecstatic with Andrew Thomas. This is home run pick for me, and I think the Giants nailed it.
100% agree. Listen, you know, we spoke at length, I think, a few days ago about how we were convinced, and this is something that I don't think we brought up in our opening statements about the Giants draft. They successfully executed a smokescreen. 100% executed a smokescreen, which is something we haven't seen in years. I mean, the Giants are one of the most leaky organizations, and really the only change is Joe Judge coming in here. And, you know, a lot of people try to argue against this, but, you know, when they picked Saquon Barkley, sure, there were rumors about them, you know, maybe trading out or maybe drafting a quarterback, but the overarching theme of the 2018 pre-draft everything was just how in love with Saquon Barkley Dave Gettleman was. And even last year, There were rumors about how much the Giants liked Daniel Jones, and the only reason people didn't believe it is because of how unbelievable it was at the time to take Daniel Jones at number six. I don't think I saw a peep about Andrew Thomas going four to the Giants at all the week leading up to the draft. Mm. You know, for us, we were all thinking it was going to be Tristan Wirfs who wound up sliding to the Bucs at 14 because the Giants had done the most pre-draft research on him. Now, maybe he was someone they were targeting in a potential trade back. And again, I'll pound that trade back drum all you want. If the offer is not there, the offer is not there. And I was shocked at the top half of the draft to see as few trades as we did, especially with the Lions having as much leverage at three. And kudos to the Dolphins for still landing their guy. But, you know, all in all, a great smokescreen. Pro Football Focus put out some stats on Andrew Thomas. They gave him a 91.3 run block grade, an 89 pass block grade, five sacks allowed in his entire three-year college career, and only 25 pressures. Best among Power 5 offensive tackles, and you mentioned it, he's shutting down pass rushers in the SEC at left tackle for years. That is awesome. And listen, toughest conference in college football. Not much more you can say. Yeah, for people knocking the high floor thing, isn't that what you want? Right? You don't want Eric Flowers coming in here and hoping that he develops. You know, Mekhi Becton, maybe if they had traded back, but again, like a guy who's as pro ready as Andrew Thomas, you have to be thrilled with.
Yeah, you have to be thrilled with, and especially in today's climate where the uncertainty of, you know, the offseason and how much they're going to be able to have training camp and rookie minicamp, you can throw out the window, but OTAs you can throw out the window. So it's really just training camp. But Andrew Thomas, like the thing about it is when you look at offensive linemen, so many times people get sort of, you know, caught up with ceiling. This guy can be this. You know, and so many times people think potential is guaranteed. Potential is not guaranteed. You know, it's far from a guarantee. But when I watched Tristan Wirfs and when I saw Andrew Thomas, I saw two guys that were consistently good throughout their career. I sort of, you know, was going back and forth, but Andrew Thomas, to me, gave him the slightest, but they were 1A, 1B. It was so close for me. I would have been ecstatic with either one. And the good thing is, this is a guy that has played left tackle. He played it throughout his college career and played it really good against really good competition. It's not a situation where Jedrick Wills, where he's played right tackle. Now, I want to say this. To me, right tackle and left tackle are equally important in today's game. Mm-hmm. You know, if the Giants were able to come out of this with their own Lane Johnson, that's a huge win in my opinion. Getting a franchise offensive tackle is so hard, and they're so important that it doesn't matter if it's left or right. They're both just equal in today's NFL. And Andrew Thomas, for all the people that are saying, you know, we need a left tackle, this is, of the four, the most consistent left tackle, the one with the most experience. I keep repeating it, but I'm thrilled with this pick. I love the pick. I think this is a day one left tackle for the Giants. I don't think they should play him at right.
I agree.
Don't play him at right tackle. Play him at left on the right side, figure it out with Nate Solder and Cam Fleming. But to me, the left side of the offensive line, Juan Hernandez, Andrew Thomas, hopefully for the next decade plus.
Agree. All right, shall we move on to Xavier McKinney?
Yeah.
All right.
For me, Xavier McKinney, I mean, just incredible value. This is a guy
ridiculous
that is
value.
Widely regarded to go into the top 15. Many people had him going to the Dallas Cowboys, I think at 17 or wherever they were picking, but really good player. And I talked about it at the beginning of the show where what is Joe Judge looking for? What he's looking for, versatility. What does Xavier McKinney do? Better question, what is he not able to do? He can get to the quarterback, great blitzer. He can cover. He can play in the box, do so many things. I remember reading something about McKinney where, you know, someone said that really Nick Saban had so much trust in him. And it's so rare for Nick Saban to have so much trust in one guy. And you look at what Joe Judge said, where he says that I can see Xavier McKinney being the quarterback of this offense, of the defense. That's the goal with this pick, with this player. Just an overall good football player, versatile football player that can do many things, and I think will come in and really from day one be a starter and I think is a really good compliment next to Jabril Peppers. How they plan on running this defense is going to be interesting to see, but this is a really good pick. And again, I would have loved to trade down, but in terms of value, if you can get a player like Xavier McKinney, I think I sort of see a little bit of Tyrann Mathieu in him. He can play, he can cover, he can blitz, he can really good against the run, really good tackler. A little bit of a Tyrann Mathieu type player. But I, again, really happy with this pick. Incredible value. This is a guy that I think was easily a top 20 player in the draft. And for the Giants to get him, just awesome.
Yep, agree. This, for me, I mean, you harped on the versatility aspect. And I think when you don't have, and I keep using this word, but you don't have many alphas on this defense, the versatility is important, right? Another Pro Football Focus stat, Xavier McKinney was just as versatile as Isaiah Simmons last year without any of the fanfare. He played over 200 snaps in box, slot, and deep. So again, harping on the versatility, it's there. And again, the Joe Judge influence is pretty clear on this one. I mean, a lot of people had Xavier McKinney as a first-round pick, so the value was there. But again, an Alabama guy, a guy that Nick Saban clearly trusted. Joe Judge was on Nick Saban's staff for 3 years as an analyst, so he's definitely got some connections down there. And Joe Judge, again, he says, trust the tape. He trusted the tape on Andrew Thomas, and he trusted the tape on Xavier McKinney, because Xavier McKinney ran a 4.63 at the combine, right? Another example of ways that you can overthink the pre-draft process is some guy running the 40 injured. Well, now some teams may have some concerns about both his durability and his speed. Look at the game tape. He's great. Thrilled with the pick. Quarterback of the Giants defense. They nailed rounds 1 and 2.
And that's why I think he fell out of the first round, is because that 40 time.
Yeah.
But like I said, I mean, you watch this guy. I mean, he could do so much. And again, quarterback of the defense is a great way to sum up what his role is going to be with this team. He's going to be able to do a lot of things. And remember, high football IQ, toughness, speed. That's sort of the theme of what the Giants are looking for. Versatility, high football IQ, and speed. And I think this guy checks all those boxes. Just a great pick. Day one starter. I'm interested to see how him and Jabril Peppers and then Sprinkle and Julian Love, how they do this. But really, really good pick. I'm ecstatic about these first two picks from the Giants.
Agreed. Round 3, Matt Pert.
Right. This was sort of, remember when you and I did our mock draft, we had the Giants getting 2 tackles. Mm-hmm. We had him taking Isaiah Wilson in round 2.
Right. Who, by the way, went up in round 1.
Yes. Yeah, he did go in round 1. With Matt Pert, I didn't really study much about him. I looked a lot into, so after the Big 4, I looked into Ezra Cleveland, mm-hmm. Austin Jackson, Josh Jones, who fell surprisingly. Those were all the 3 guys. Lucas Niang, those were all the 4. But Matt Pert, as I continue to watch him, when the selection was made, first of all, totally understand it. You know, Giants double down on offensive tackle. Like I said, the upside with this. And now we can talk about upside, because as you get in the later rounds, upside is important. Developing is important, because you're not going to, as the players that are available that can impact you on day one start to wind down because you get into the later rounds of the draft. Now you look for guys that have upside that can be developed into something eventually. And I think Matt Pert fits that. He's a really big man, long arms, local guy from, I think he was from Queens, right?
Yeah.
Queens or Bronx, I think.
The Bronx, actually.
Really good.
Yeah.
Bronx, yeah, but really good player. He's not as raw. One thing that when I'm watching him and I researched him, he's not as raw as sort of he was being made out to be when he drafted him. Definitely needs to be developed. And I love what Joe Judge says, that he doesn't need to be developed. He's developing. And that's a perfect way to sum it up. Good pass blocker. He's helping him on his frame. I mean, he's like a 6'6". He almost looks like a tight end.
He's 6'7" with 36 and something quarter inch arms. I think the stat was he had the longest arms in the entire combine.
Yeah, I mean, he is.
The physical traits are there. I think he could put on a few pounds. I think he's only like 317 pounds, but I mean, again, he's freaky.
He is, and I guess the Giants really liked him at the Senior Bowl. They drafted a lot of guys in the Senior Bowl, actually. Yep. But again, the guy that you're going to give to Mark Colombo, you're going to say, mold this guy for me to be the eventual right tackle of the future. And I think the upside is there. definitely a guy that can develop into your right tackle in the future. Big, physical dude that we're going to see what he ends up being. But you cannot go wrong with offensive line in the middle rounds. This is where you get the guys for the future and ton of athletic potential. And just excited to see how he plays. I don't think that he is unplayable in year one. That's the thing about him. I think he definitely would struggle if he was thrown in there, if need be. But the luxury the Giants have is that they have Cam Fleming. They have Nate Soldier. So it's not necessarily that this third-round pick has to just be thrown into the fire. No, yeah. You can ease him into it. You can develop him in the offseason, throughout the season, and then stick him in there. But good player. A lot of upside. You got to like what you see from Matt Perkins.
Yeah, another thing that I've been pounding the desk for is depth. In the past, and I've been guilty of this myself, but in the past, Giants fans will see a finished product, either the secondary or the offensive line or the receiving core, and they'll say, holy shit, there it is, it's done, this is going to be a top five unit in the NFL this season. And of course, what happens? One starter goes down with an injury, which is the least far-fetched thing you could think of, because football is one of the toughest sports on the planet, and injuries happen all the time, and especially when you're looking at how fucked up the preseason schedule is going to be with OTAs and training camps because of COVID-19, you need depth, not just this year, but every year, and especially at the offensive line position. A guy gets rolled up on, there you go. A guy breaks his hand, he's out. You need that depth. And this also goes back to what I was saying earlier about how I don't think the Giants are going to compete this year. The earliest you can hope for them to compete is next year. In the 21-22 season. It's picks like Matt Pert, who physically, all the tools are there. And something that I got to change the way I think about the Giants, because as much as I have been against this, I have fallen into that trap where I will start to use it as an excuse for Giants players, is that veteran presence of helping those younger guys. Because Joe Judge himself said, I'm not, bringing in guys to babysit. And he didn't say, I don't care about high character, but he basically said, I want guys that are here to win, and I will pick the guys that give me the best chance to win. And you bring in a guy like Mark Colombo, highly regarded as one of the best offensive line coaches in the league, you let him go to work on someone like Matt Pert. Not Nate Solder. You let Mark Colombo go to town on Matt Pert. You have Andrew Thomas at left tackle and Matt Pert at right tackle for, knock on wood, 10 years. And not only that, you have a third round cap hit, rookie contract, starting at right tackle. So moving forward, I love the pick. We doubled up on offensive tackle in our mock draft. I love it from the depth perspective. They now have Andrew Thomas, Matt Pert, Cam Fleming, and Nate Solder all capable of playing tackle. So if one of these guys goes down, listen, it's not ideal, but it's not the end of the world. You have that depth to back it up. So this pick, for me, I love it. It fits in a number of different ways, and even in the cliche ways that we make fun of, local guy coming back home to New York. So huge fan of the Matt Pert pick, hoping that he can develop into that franchise right tackle in a year or two.
Yep, I agree.
All right.
I agree. And we talk about I agree with Judge. He is developing. Like, this is not a guy – it's not out of the realm of possibility that Matt Pert
– starting right tackle late in the season?
Middle of the season. Like, I don't think it's out of the whole realm of possibility. I think he needs work, but this is not something that's – he's not, like, unplayable. You know, like, he's definitely a guy that we could see in the middle of the season, late in the season, like, then we see his snaps go up at right tackle.
Darnay Holmes, fourth round.
Quarterback, UCLA. This is about value. Bucky Brooks called him the best slot corner in the NFL. And I think this pick surprised people because of the investments that the Giants have made in their secondary over the course of the last 2 years. But what people have to understand is the Giants have a new coaching staff, and their opinion on a player, for example, like Grant Haley, like Corey Ballantyne, right? Fifth-round pick, undrafted guys. It might be different than what the previous head coaching staff thought about. this is a guy that I think is going to come in and challenge for that nickel spot. Now, he's a little bit undersized, but again, another Senior Bowl guy. Read some things about him at the Senior Bowl. He gave a lot of receivers problems. But again, a guy that could have an instant impact, but is really a guy that I think will eventually take a roster spot from somebody that was either drafted years back, maybe a Corey Ballantyne. But it's not like somebody – the thing about the cornerback position, this is interesting because a lot of people looked at this pick and said, we have so many corners. Yes, that's true. But when you talk about the nickel position, the Giants don't have – that's a weak spot for the Giants defense. You know, it's that nickel spot and that's secondary. And this guy, Darnay Holmes, I think can fill that. So I'm thrilled. I don't know much about him, but reading about him and seeing what some people say about him, you have to like the upside. You have to also like the ability that he can come in and play day one, which is something very rare for a fourth round pick.
Yeah, for sure. Again, a guy I didn't know too much about going into the draft. I saw the same Bucky Brooks tweet you did. Gotta be excited about Darnay Holmes. Not much else to add based on what you said.
Yeah, it's people will be surprised because it's like another corner. Well, you gotta understand. I think what you're gonna see with the Giants is sort of the reserves in the secondary. There's gonna be a change in them. You might see guys that were drafted that you might think had potential like to do something. Sam Beal is a guy that's going to be – we're going to have to see what happens to him. But one thing about Darnay Holmes was that high intelligence, not just football IQ. This dude graduated college in like 2 years.
Yeah, I saw that.
Two or three, which is insane. But
yeah, he graduated early because he knew he was going to declare.
Right, and versatility, right? We talk about versatility. Well, Darnay Holmes can also return kicks, which if you're a Giants fan watching this team, you know the Giants could definitely use kick return and punt return. So, again, versatility, high football IQ, and this is a rare fourth-round pick that could potentially start from day one, which is pretty good value, in my opinion.
For sure. All right, so let's do fifth round, Shane Lemieux. And then we can – do you want to bunch the last five guys together since we got four linebackers and a cornerback?
Yeah, sure.
All right. Shane Lemieux is probably – I don't want to say he's my favorite pick the Giants made because I'm obviously in love with most of the picks the Giants made. But in terms of value, I think Shane Lemieux is easily my favorite. Four-year starter in the Pac-12 for Oregon, has been working – at both guard and center this past offseason. So there's that glimmer of hope that maybe he is the center of the future for the Giants. TBD. Regardless, you have Kevin Zeitler, who I don't even know how old he is. I think he's like 29 going on 30. He might have just turned 30. Again, he's getting up there in age. You still have Will Hernandez, but depth. You're going to need that offensive line depth. And maybe not a guy who's a day one starter, but you've seen the number of injuries the Giants have had on the offensive line over the last five seasons. Having a guy like Shane Lemieux, who is a mauler in the run game, could use a little work in his pass protection. I love it. I love the pick. Again, four-year college starter. You know, it's not like he's been around the block. He knows what he's doing. I'm ecstatic with this pick.
Yeah, again, really physical, like you said, mauler, brawler, great way to sum him up. And it's what I've sort of asked for is building your offensive line depth. Not putting yourself in a position where a guy just sort of falls, a guy like Kevin Zeitler, for example, good for 2 years.
Falls off.
That third year falls off and you don't really have his replacement ready. Well, what this does is it gives you flexibility. It allows you to bring in a guy in the fourth round, develop him, and have him ready when that time comes where you can say, you know what? I got a guy ready to go on his rookie contract. I don't need to pay Kevin Zeitler $10-11 million what they're paying him right now. So building offensive line depth, preparing yourself for injuries or a potential replacement, and you gotta like it. It's something I've been beating the table for. And I know, listen, people were harping on center. And the one thing I just really want people to understand about the NFL draft and any draft really is the NFL draft is not like a grocery store, right? Where I can walk in and I can say, I need milk, I need cookies, I need eggs.
I like this analogy.
I need toilet paper and I need hand sanitizer. And I can just go and get those things, right? You walk into the NFL draft, you're looking at what's available and you're ranking what's available. If I got a guy, right? Let's say I need a center, right? In this, for example, and I'm in the third round, I'm in the fourth round, and the center available, I evaluated him, I watched his tape, I interviewed him, I went through the whole pre-draft process with him. And I came away saying, good player, but I wouldn't take him in the third round. I would take him in maybe the fourth or fifth round, right? But I see another player that, but I know that I need a center, right? But I see another player, a guard, a corner, who liked the film, spent time, again, went through the pre-draft process, and I gave him a grade of a third round grade or a second round grade, right? And I'm picking, and I see that this guy brings more value, right? I'm taking the corner. You don't draft a position. You draft the player, right? You draft good players. Teams that just, people that say, well, we need this, we need that. Yeah, we do need that. And it's sort of what the edge rusher is. Yeah, the Giants need an edge rusher, but if you evaluated a certain edge rusher that's available, right, and you came away saying, I have a fifth round grade or I have a fourth round grade on him, right? Well, you're not going to take him in the third round for this because I need an edge rusher, right? That's not how this works. That's how you miss on picks. And a lot of times people don't understand that because they think you can just go in there and, I need this, this, and this, and I'm going to get this, this, this. It doesn't work that way. You got to see how the board falls. You have to go through evaluating the players. And let's say Shane Lemieux, they had a third round grade on him, right? I believe he was their fourth. It was a fifth round pick, right? Shane Lemieux was a fifth round pick. Let's say they had a fourth round grade on him or a third round grade on him, right? And he's available in the fifth round. That's incredible value. So you take him instead of a player of need, that you might have a fifth or sixth round grade on. And the best thing about the draft is, and I think this is something that Dave Gettleman has said repeatedly, is when value meets need. Well, this is what he's talking about. When you're able to fill a big need, left tackle, with a player that you rank incredibly high, that's the best thing. But it's not the case in every round. It's just not the way it works in this draft. So some drafts, they might be incredibly loaded on offensive linemen, and luckily for the Giants, they need offensive tackles, and they're able to land them. Sometimes you might need, in other cases, like edge rusher, after Chase Young, and it was a big drop-off to Kayvon LeChason and Zach Bond and YGN from Penn State. So you can't just go into a draft saying, I got to get this, this, and this, and expect to do it. It's just not possible. In a perfect world, yeah, but it's not a grocery store.
Yeah, I like the analogy. Let's do the last five. Cam Brown, Carter Coughlin, TJ Brunson, Chris Williamson, and Tate Crowder. I guess just pick one or two and tell me why you like them.
Well, I'll lump them all together. There are different types of linebackers, right? Fun fact, Cam Brown actually went to the same high school as my brother.
Oh, nice.
Paint Branch High School. He's a local guy. Lived actually really close to where I live. I knew he looked familiar. Go back to what Joe just says about what he's looking for. Versatility. Look at all these linebackers. They took Carter Coughlin, Cam Brown, Munson, the guy from South Carolina. All these linebackers, they all can do, they're all multidimensional players. What they can do, they do many things. We talk about high football IQ. A lot of these guys have high football IQs. We talked about the versatility. We talked about how speed, that's the one thing that they harp on, is they want to add speed at that position. And, maybe not all these guys will be on the roster, but the hope is you can get one or two that can be really good contributors on special teams. And I think that's what the sixth and seventh round is about, is getting guys that are good. You can get a good special team guy in those rounds, maybe a guy that can contribute later on. It's very rare for you to find a star or an immediate impact player in those later rounds. But what you're looking for is you're looking for guys that have incredible upside that you can come in, potentially develop into something. And, you know, again, those three things: versatility, high character, high football IQ, you know, and speed. And I think those three things are what the Giants are looking for. And I think all those linebackers that they drafted, Carter Coughlin, Cam Brown, Munson, obviously Mr. Irrelevant, Tate Crowder, I think they all do that for the Giants. So, you know, we just have to see how it plays out in training camp if there is one.
Yeah, for sure. I happen to love Cam Brown. I love his physicals. He's an absolute beast. Super productive. He's probably my favorite of those five.
Yeah, he is. Cam Brown is his size is definitely intriguing.
What is he? 6'6"? Definitely a guy that 230.
Yeah, he's 6'6", 230. Really plays sort of like he plays aggressive football.
Yeah, and he's more of a weak. I think he's more of a weak side linebacker too. But I mean, listen, not to compare everything with something the Giants have done in the past, but strikes me as someone similar to Leonard Floyd. I could be wrong there, but that's sort of what I was getting looking at his physics.
Yeah, the frame, you can see sort of that pass rushing type ability. I'm interested to see what they do with him. Again, the production wasn't really that high.
Yeah.
But when you talk to people at Penn State, they also look at him as a guy that is, was a captain on the defense, was a leader on the defense, knew a lot, smart football player. So I'm interested to see what happens with Cam Brown. But I agree with you. Of all those picks, him and Carter Coughlin are the two I'm going to be keeping a very close eye on.
There you go.
Just because they're one had a high production in college.
Yep.
Carter Coughlin, who's got a lot of sacks, but Cam Brown, just because of his physical traits, I mean, he's interesting.
For sure. Any other thoughts before we get into questions?
No, I think we pretty much nailed every pick. So yeah, we can get into questions.
Plenty of questions, and not all of them are Bleach related, thankfully. That seems to be the theme.
Don't inject bleach.
If you actually, you know, if you think it is okay, go ahead and do it and save us all the trouble. From TJ, are you as in love with Shane Lemieux pick as I am? Something about the way he mauls people and enjoys it makes me super excited to watch him help this team. Yes. I said that earlier. Probably my favorite value pick is Shane Lemieux.
Yeah, I agree. In terms of value, I wouldn't say it's Shane Lemieux. I think it's sort of
probably McKinney for value, but in terms of need and production in college.
Surprisingly, I really like the Darnay Holmes pick.
Okay,
because I think he fourth round come in day one starter at that slot corner position where he can compete and potentially start him. And I think that's awesome. That'd be huge if they're able to find a day one starter at that slot corner position. But Lemieux is definitely, there's a lot to like about him. I mean, he's a big, nasty physical dude. You watch some of the highlights in the film on him. I mean, that's a dangerous man. That's a violent man right there.
Yeah. From Mickey, what realistic moves do you think could be made the remainder of the offseason that would make this team a wild card contender? Mickey suggests creating cap space by extending Leonard Williams, restructuring Zeitler in order to re-sign Marcus Golden. I don't think that there's really much they can do. I feel like now I'm drawing a blank. I feel like there's only one guy that they'd be able to restructure, and it might be Zeitler that would enable them.
But would you restructure him?
No, honestly, I wouldn't do anything at this point. I would, you know, I would hope. Yeah, I would leave the team as is. I would hope that they don't give in to Leonard Williams' contract demands. I hope that he just plays out his franchise tag and fucks off elsewhere. And then, you know, we could use that cap space to get a legitimate pass rusher. In an ideal world, Marcus Golden would have been brought back. I don't think they had that much interest. Otherwise, he'd be back already. I don't think there's much else that they could do this season. I think they have a tough schedule. They have a rookie head coach. They still have a lot of holes and a lot of what ifs. So I don't think that they're going to be a wild card contender. Personally, I think they're probably like a 5-win team, 6-win team, if everything pans out based on how tough their schedule is. But, you know, moving forward, 2021, I think is a season where the Giants have the opportunity to make some serious noise in both the draft and free agency and make a run for a playoff spot. I don't think it's this year.
Yeah, I mean, I think, you know, when you talk about this season, and obviously you can be wrong, but because of the uncertainty with what's going to be, what's the summer going to look like? Is there going to be training right. camp? How much time are they going to be able to spend with these players? You got to remember with the Giants, you know, they have a lot of young players, especially yep. on defense, right? They have a whole new coaching staff. So it's going to be really tough to incorporate these young players that were already here into your system while also inheriting all these guys that you drafted. So there's a lot going against the Giants in terms of how much time they're going to have with these players and sort of with the new coaching staff, how quickly can they get these guys up to speed? It's the Giants are really up against a tough task. And then also you factor in the fact that they lack talent at a lot of spots on the defensive side of the ball.
Right.
It's a tall order. In terms of what they can do, they could circle back to Clowney. I don't know. I mean, it's crazy because I think we're both in agreement that the pass rushing in the draft outside of Chase Young, and I'm really not that high on Kayvon LeChason either. Outside of Chase Young, it's really like a huge, like it was not a good pass rushing.
No,
class.
It was a big fall off.
So I'm surprised guys like Clowney didn't get a market. I think possibly because of the injury, and again, with this whole uncertainty in today's climate, you just can't, the teams couldn't examine the injury that Clowney sustained. And then Yannick Ngakoue, he never had his market develop either. I mean, I thought for certain he would have been traded in this draft, but he didn't have, I mean, the GM called us, so they didn't even get any offers. So they could circle back to Yannick Ngakoue, see if what the value is there. But again, unlikely that I think they would part with any high draft picks for next year to get Yannick Ngakoue, plus have to give him a long-term deal as well. And then possibly you could circle back to Clowney, but again, I mean, in terms of free agency, there's not much that they could do. So what the real hope is, if you're the Giants, is Oshane Ximenes, Lorenzo Carter, and then Kyle Fackel can come in, and you know, you hope those two guys that you drafted are a lot better, and then Kyle Fackel gives you what he gave the Packers when Patrick Graham was there. But it's going to be a big weakness, the pass rush and the overall defense, and given the climate and uncertainty about the offseason.
No, I agree with all that. I also just don't want them committing big money to a guy like Clowney. I don't even want them committing big long-term money to Leonard Williams. Keep that cap space freed up because you never know. You shouldn't just spend it to spend it, you know? If this season is a wash anyway, let it be a wash. There's going to be guys that are going to be available free agents next year. The draft next year is supposed to be great for pass rush as well. You know, if it's not, I don't know. I just don't think that they should do anything. I think they're fine as is.
Yeah. Yeah, I mean, I think it all depends on what you think about Clowney, right?
Right.
If you think that this is an impactful alpha pass rusher, I mean, for $16, $17 million over a three-year span, like if they give him a three-year, you know, three-year $55, $56 million deal, if he's willing to take $15, $16 million a year, maybe that's an option for the Giants. I don't think they could give him a one-year deal worth like $16, $17 million because of their cap situation. But I'm in agreement. So I wouldn't go near Clowney. I like Yannick Ngakoue a lot, and a lot of it's, you know, the Maryland bias. He was a Terp.
Yeah.
But again, parting with high draft picks and giving him – you're going to have to give him $20 million a year. I just don't think that that's feasible for the Giants right now. So
me neither. And also, like, not to be that guy, but the way that he's handled this whole thing on Twitter, I don't think he's the kind of guy that Joe Judge would be looking for.
See, the thing about that is, yeah, he hasn't – and again, this goes back to my bias, but – I think that he was essentially played by the Jacksonville Jaguars. I think that they told him, we're letting you go. He knows that Jacksonville doesn't want him, right? They're not going to give him a long-term deal. And he just feels like they're using that tag to impact where he's going to go. And I think that, you know, listen, I understand his frustration. I would not handle it the way he's handled it.
I totally understand the frustration.
Yeah, you're right. I mean, it's the way he's handled is not smart, but I just think what the Jaguars have done. I mean, there's a lot of – with that situation, it's a perfect example of what Yannick's side, the Jaguars side, and then there's the truth. There's three sides to that. That's the way that whole situation is just absolutely horrible. If they told him after that Jaguars game, like he claimed that, hey, we're letting you go, you're going to hit the free agent market, thank you for your services, and then they franchise him and they lied to him and now they're not willing to trade him. Yeah, it's sort of effed up for the Jaguars to do it. But again, it's, who knows, that situation has just gotten really bad for both sides. And
yep,
it's cost both sides, cost the Jaguars potential high draft picks. And
yep,
on Yannick, it potentially cost them some money too.
Yep. From Stan, what role do you see for McKinney in this defense? I don't think there really is one. I think he's going to be all over the place, and I like it.
Yeah, I think I see sort of a Tyrann Mathieu type role with him. He can do a lot of things. He is, if you're looking about the draft pick that can make the biggest impact in year one, I think it would be, even as polished as Andrew Thomas is, I think Xavier McKinney is a really, really good player, and he's going to do a lot for this defense.
This next question from Harry. While it is great that Joe Judge brought some Patriots-like strategy to the franchise, do you find it worrisome that he didn't also draft a guy with a tattoo of a domestic terrorist group?
No, I mean, I'm not picking that. That's,
I can appreciate that he left the far right back up in Foxborough.
I can't wait for them to ask Bill about that.
Yeah, I think they already did, and the kids said it was just a poorly advised tattoo. I don't want to get into it.
They asked the punter. It was a kicker. Right. Is he a punter? Yeah, yeah. Is he a kicker?
I think he was a punter.
But I'm waiting for them to ask Belichick. I don't know if they've asked Belichick about that yet. I want to see what Belichick says.
Right.
I'm not getting into that.
Yep. From Ryan, favorite UDFA?
Austin Mack.
I knew you were going to say that. I think he has a really
good chance to stay. If you're a good route runner, right, and you are able to make catches in traffic, contested catches, and absorb hits, you can stick if your speed is not there. Like, I think one of the reasons why Austin Mack didn't get drafted is the speed, and also the fact that just the insane amount of receivers that were in this draft.
Yep.
And I think that he, in another draft, I could definitely see Austin Mack being a late round pick, but. If you look into his background, and I've been looking at these receivers, both Derek Dillon, LSU, and the two Ohio State guys.
Yeah, Benjamin
Victor.
One
thing about Mack is, yeah, he is he was a guy that has talent, but really fell down on the depth chart, and the production didn't ever meet the talent, and that's sort of why he went undrafted. But I think he has a chance to really stick for the Giants, and a lot of it's going to come down to, like I said, when you talk about wide receivers 5 and 6 is, can they contribute on special teams? So what they're going to end up doing is, you have Darius Slayton, you have Golden Tate, you have Sterling Shepard, and then after that, you're going to have Corey Coleman, Cody Core, and then, you know, they got that guy Stills that was on the practice squad last year from West Virginia, and then you get these three other young guys that you just picked up as UDFAs. So it's going to be interesting to see how that sort of bottom of that wide receiver depth chart plays out. But a lot of it is going to be special teams as well.
Yeah.
How can you contribute on special teams?
Yeah, I mean, listen, it's tough not to love the Austin Mack signing. I'm looking at his physical stats right now. Arm length in the 91st percentile with 10-inch hands. And you said it already, but he's a great route runner. I've always sort of had a fetish for the big receivers out there. Ramsey's Barden. Plax was 6'5", I think. Always loved that. During the Giants Super Bowl runs, they had big tight ends as well. Shout out to Jake Ballard and Bear Pasco. But Ryson John out of fucking Canada, British Columbia,
6'7",
230 pounds, can high point the ball really well. I'm looking at these highlights, and it looks like some mom is filming on her camcorder from the sideline. Probably a long shot to make the roster. But listen, you can't teach height. And, you know, maybe he'll be able to dominate some of the smaller defensive backs in OTAs and such and make this roster. Again, long shot.
They're going to try my tight end too, I think.
Yeah, they should. Big fan of that one. Let's see. From Alexis, does it make any sense that the reason DG wasn't let go is because Judge will soon be trusted with personnel decisions? I mean,
I think that's sort of being it's sort of being overblown. Listen, I think Joe Judge, more than any coach since probably Tom Coughlin, which isn't saying much, but I think he has a large voice in the room. It's been well documented, well reported that he is has a really strong influence on personnel. But I do think it's ultimately still Dave Gettleman's final decision. Now, I think Dave Gettleman is, you know, sort of more willing to go with what the coach says, maybe more so than years past. But I think Judge's influence is well sort of on the team. Like, he has a pretty large voice, but it's not a situation where they're locking Dave Gettleman in the closet right. when they're making a pick.
Right.
You know, like, Dave Gettleman is involved too.
Yep. From Justin, what do you think is going to happen with Solder now? I think this is it, bub. This is your last year. I think they're going to probably play him at right tackle and then move on from that cap hit and sayonara.
Yeah, I think this is his last year. He's probably going to play. He's probably the favorite to start at right tackle. You can't really cut him. And this goes back to restructuring. Why I don't think you should restructure guys right now, especially not Zeitler or Golden Tate, is because you just don't know when that cliff is going to come down. I mean, you could part with them after the next year. But restructuring Soldier made it tough to move on from him after last season. And I think you play him at right tackle, not worth cutting because the cap gain is minimal. It's a huge dead cap. You play him at right tackle, and if he struggles, you just know you have depth behind him to sort of bench him. But you're sort of just really stuck with him this year.
Yeah. All right, let's do two more since we are – oh, we're over an hour. All right, let's do two more. I've seen people joking about this one. This is from Malcolm. Isn't it interesting that Benjamin Victor and Austin Mack wanted to sign with the Giants and not the Washington Redskins, who they played with Dwayne Haskins 2 years ago? What does that say about Daniel Jones? Also, who had the best draft in the division?
In terms of the receivers, I think in terms of opportunity, you know, the Giants probably presented a better opportunity because they can take a receiver and the receivers, there's a lot of things. They have good enough receivers, but you know, the back end, like I said, there's opportunity for a better opportunity to roster spot. In terms of the best draft class, I mean, you got to go with Dallas. I think they had a really strong class. Yeah, I do think they had a really strong class.
I'm going with the Giants. And,
I mean, the thing about me is I can't do these, you know, what's your grade on the Giants draft? Who had the better draft? Because time will tell. You like what Dallas did. I'm a huge CeeDee Lamb fan.
Me too. I think he's the best receiver in the draft, and he eerily reminds me of DeAndre Hopkins a little bit.
Yeah, he's a really, really good player. You could say Dallas. I think you can make the case for Dallas or the Giants. The Redskins had a good draft too, I think. I really, really like their Antonio Gibson pick out of Memphis. I think he's sort of like a Curtis Samuel type player. I think that's what Ron Rivera saw in him. But I'm just not good with these, you know, who had the better draft. You know, ask me that in a year or two.
All right, whatever. That's fair. But listen, we're here to speculate, and I'm going to say the Giants had the best in the division. Let's see. Are there any? All right, let's end with this one. Not a draft from Mike. Not a draft question, but how long do you think Golden Tate will last at this point? I don't think he finishes out his remaining 3 years. Me neither.
I think if you have
Joe Judge giving and Kevin Abrams with as much influence over Dave Gettleman as we think, I think also, like Nate Solder, this could be his last year.
Yeah, I also think a lot of it's going to be dependent on what happens with Sterling Shepard's health.
That's true, too.
Sterling Shepard, I mean, he's playing this huge risk. I mean, another concussion. We're talking about his, what, fourth concussion in 2 years?
Yeah, I think another concussion and it's over.
I mean, that's insane. But a lot of it's going to be production. Does production meet his salary? And that's where the Giants make their decision. I'm not as, like, Ethan, you really don't like Golden Tate. I'm not as down on him. I think he can contribute. The problem is that you sort of already have Golden Tate and Sterling Shepard. So how you make that work, I don't know. But new coaching staff, we'll see. New offense system. I'm definitely not going to play out the remainder of his contract, but can I see him sticking around past next year? Yeah, sure. Maybe, possibly.
Cool. Should we wrap up?
But I wanted to close with something that happened to me on draft.
Oh, I forgot about this. Yes, let's close with this.
So while I was celebrating the Andrew Thomas pick and telling the Giants on Twitter how much I love them for taking Andrew Thomas, I don't read my mentions a lot, but there's a lot of people coming in. You're a fraud, you know. You don't know football. You're not like all these insults. And I'm like, what? I mean, people really hate Andrew Thomas that much? Like, what's going on? Then I sort of saw that Saquon Barkley had retweeted a tweet from somebody. I'm not gonna mention his name, but said that I can't even find the tweet anymore. Remember when New York Giants Daily was all about Josh Rosen and destroyed the Giants for taking Saquon instead of trading back for a quarterback? Trading back for a quarterback. I don't think I said that, but anyways, I remember a lot of QB1 tweets for Rosen. Well, the team that Rosen has been on for the past 2 years have taken QBs with the top five picks, Murray and Tua. And Saquon retweeted it. And I got a lot of responses and all that and blah, blah, blah. So I felt like I've addressed this so many times that I feel like I need to address it one more time. And this will be the last time I'm doing this. I'm done with the 2018 draft after this. For the record, when the Giants were picking number two in the 2018 class, it was a strong quarterback class. The Giants, who at the time I thought needed a complete tear down and rebuild, and had a quarterback who was on the back nine of his career, clearly someone, and at the time, remember, the relationship was sort of uncertain because what Ben McAdoo did to him. I thought it was a good time for the Giants to take a chance on their franchise quarterback. Again, it's so important. The quarterback position is so important that teams rarely get the opportunity to go from franchise quarterback to heir apparent like that. There's usually like a gap where you're in sort of no man's land at the quarterback position. So I thought, hey, this is a perfect opportunity. Throughout the entire draft process, I studied the quarterbacks, and I came to the conclusion that Josh Rosen is the best quarterback that I think the Giants should take. Obviously, fast forward to now, I mean, can you name me a quarterback that's had a worse situation in his first 2 years than Josh Rosen?
No.
I mean, in Arizona, I mean, he was – and now in Miami last year, two teams at Arizona, first-year head coach that was fired, lacked a lot of skill position players, bad offensive line, was a bad team. And it showed because they had the number one pick the next year. And then Miami, who was essentially tanking the entire year, and Josh Rosen really didn't play as much because Ryan Fitzpatrick did. But I'm not here to defend Josh Rosen. What I'm here to say is my stance on Saquon Barkley, surprisingly, this individual really doesn't know, but is that I've always said, see, I'm not part of the running backs don't matter crowd. I do believe there's value in certain types of running back. And you and I have debated this on this show and sort of through texts and our private conversations, is that I do believe that Saquon Barkley is worthy of a top five pick. It's just that I didn't believe at the time the Giants were the right pick for Saquon Barkley was the right pick for the Giants. Why? I think they needed a full rebuild. I thought there was uncertainty in the quarterback position. And I thought that if you weren't going to take a quarterback, which, yes, I was highly in favor of them taking a quarterback, then you probably should trade down. But staying at two and taking a player in Saquon, great player, but unfortunately his position, if you look at data, if you leave emotions out of it, right, because there's two things you look at when you're talking about a player. There's the emotional side of how great you think he is and how great you think he will be. And you look at the overall data of that position is the running back position, the running back shelf life is not as high. They usually, after the fifth or sixth year, you start to see a downfall. And we have seen it. Just look at the highest paid running backs over the course of the last 2 years and where they are now. If you remember correctly, Ethan, Todd Gurley was the big calling card for a lot of the people that were harping on Saquon Barkley.
Right.
You get your franchise running back, and then the next year you get your quarterback. Well, where's Todd Gurley now? He didn't even get to start his new contract. The Rams cut him because nobody would trade for him. Look at the situation with Leonard Fournette. Now, I think Saquon is a much better running back than Leonard Fournette and brings more to the table, yes. But what you're seeing, what the data is showing you is that, hey, if you draft a running back high and if you end up paying him what the Giants have to do because they invested in number two pick in him, you usually don't get the return on your investment. Just look at the data. So you look at that data and that says, hey, you know, I don't think that that's a good idea. Factor in the state of the roster where the Giants were nowhere close to contention. Clearly, I was against the pick, and I think I made a good point, and I think I had it for good reason, because as you see, we're now in year three of Saquon Barkley, and by the way, we don't expect them to compete this year, and at the earliest is going to be next season where they're competitive, and that's going to be year four of Saquon Barkley, who already plays a position that, you know,
or he's already experienced an injury.
Yeah, so listen. And the thing is, if the Giants would have traded down maybe to 5 or 6, looking the way that draft went out, there's a good chance they still would have been able to draft Saquon Barkley at 5 or at 6 because of the run on quarterbacks with those Baker and then Sam Darnold and then, you know, maybe a team would have came up for Josh Allen. I mean, who knows? But my point is, and then Bradley Chubb and Quentin Nelson went too. My point is that I love Saquon Barkley, the player. I will continue to say that he was definitely worthy of a top 5 pick, but he wasn't the right pick for the Giants at the time, not at 2, not given the state of their roster. I mean, the GM has already come out and told you that he made a mistake when evaluating this roster, so I don't know what else you need from me. I mean, he basically admitted, yeah, I misevaluated the roster. This needed to be a full rebuild. Well, clearly that was my point of view as to why not drafting Saquon number 2. Factor in all the data that's right in front of you that you can look at. And the one interesting quote I love is that the data and the facts don't care about your feelings.
So, shout out to Ben Shapiro. You know,
so yeah, you can say what you want about the running back position and Saquon Barkley. And listen, maybe he is an outlier. I don't know. I mean, he's a great player. I think he is the best back in the league. But the data that's right in front of us tell us that, hey, investment in running backs are different. So I'm not a running backs don't matter person. I do think there are certain running backs like McCaffrey, like Saquon Barkley, who are multidimensional, can do things in the passing game. They have incredible value and are definitely worthy of being picked in the top 5, top 10. I just didn't think he was the right pick for the Giants, and I continue to believe he wasn't. But with that said, I'm not mad that he's a New York Giant. I root for him. I think he's a great player. I appreciate the retweet. I did pick up a couple hundred followers. some of the replies were all, some, you know, the thing about the replies were, this is the funny thing. So a couple of the replies, I looked at the people, and they're, some of them look familiar as guys that always, you know, tweet dumb stuff at you.
Yeah.
And so it's very easy to do a Twitter search. And I did a Twitter search of their drafts, or excuse me, their tweets about Saquon and about the quarterbacks from the 2018 class. And I just want to say that a lot of you guys probably should delete your tweets because
you should screenshot them before they do.
Now, yeah. What you're saying now and what you were saying in 2018 makes you look like a hypocrite. But anyways, like I said, go ahead. I was wrong about Josh Rosen. I mean, it's not going to stop me from making my opinions. But at the end of the day, history has shown us what the running back position what the running back position is worth in this league. We saw it this past offseason. There's plenty of examples that are there. Hopefully, for the sake of the Giants, Saquon Barkley is the outlier. Hopefully, I'm definitely rooting for that. But you can't ignore the data. You just simply cannot do it.
Correct.
So appreciate the retweet, and I appreciate that guy tweeting that out. Maybe you should get your facts straight, because I didn't say they should trade back for a quarterback. I said they should trade back if they're not taking a quarterback. But anyways, thanks for the retweet, Saquon. I appreciate it. I'm glad the Giants finally got an offensive line in front of you, because I definitely think you are a guy that can be 1,200, 1,300, 1,400-yard rusher consistently, and you are the vocal point of this offense. With that said, that is my response. I'm no longer going to talk about this 2018 draft anymore. I think it's sort of beating a dead horse, but I just felt the need of bringing that up because my running back, Saquon Barkley, retweeted it. So it was just funny. But
yeah. That's how it goes, man. They don't care about facts on Twitter.
Yeah, so that is what it is. I appreciate it.
All right. With that said, let's put it to bed. Let's wrap it up. Post-draft edition. We're done. Let's take care of the housekeeping before we wrap up. Follow me on Twitter at EthanGSN, follow Weiss at NYG Daily, the blog at GothamSN. Subscribe, iTunes, Audioboom, Google Play, Stitcher Radio, Spotify. Subscribe, unsubscribe, resubscribe, 5 stars, kind review. We'll talk to you guys soon.
Peace.